You're listening to the one show that looks at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.
And welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, and we're going to be talking about how to get published. But hold on, and we'll get to that in just a minute. If you're listening to this show live, then you're on octalkradio.net. If you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, www.thecoachingperspective.com. And while there, be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some other great guests. Well, today's program, title, Want to Know How to Get Published, and we're going to be talking to Robert Murray, who is the founder and president of Style Matters. Style Matters helps you by providing professional content strategy, book packaging, self-publishing, web design, web marketing services. I could go on and on with the list. We're going to get into it as we get into the show and we start talking to Robert. But, you know, when we talk about publishing, we're really talking about more than just publishing in terms of the great American novel. We're talking about writing, all kinds of writing. And, you know, I had a weird thought today. I was thinking that, you know, for people who work out of a home office, do we write more today than we talk? You know, if you go back a number of years when we were in an office with other people, we talked every minute to other people. But today, you know, hey, I'm sitting here home today, working out of my home office today, and there's nobody else to talk to. I'm writing all day long. So writing, whether it's a book, a novel, marketing material, technical manuals, white papers, is really critical. So I'm glad to have with us Robert Murray from Style Matters. Robert, welcome to the show.
Doug, it's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank,
it's great to be here.
Thank you very much. And we've got a time difference. So, you know, I'm sitting here enjoying myself at a little bit after 4 o'clock, thinking the day's wrapping up, and you're at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, well, we still have some daylight, which is good. And it's not raining, which is even better.
I love it. Well, look, Robert, thank you very much for agreeing to be on the show. You and I met at the CAM, Conversation Among Masters, earlier this year, and I was very impressed with what your company does and with you, and I'm glad we could finally find a date and get you on the show here.
I'm delighted. It's funny what you said. I think that was a great way to start the conversation. How much do we write these days versus maybe what we did before, say, the advent of the internet or email. I think we're writing constantly. And what's more, I think that we're consuming information in a much more diverse way than we ever have, and that's constantly changing, constantly increasing. The way that we ingest information is, we like to think of, so we think of ourselves as serving the industry of publishing, but with a lowercase p, is what I always say, because it's writing is certainly a very important component of that. Video, interactive, and voice now more than ever, are digital voice that is interpreted into text, are great mediums, and so much information can be shared that way as well. So it's really a fascinating time to be at what I think of as the nexus of technology, information flow, and artistry, essentially, design.
I love it. Artistry and technology. That's a fascinating combination. Well, look, let's get right into knowing a little bit more about you, and then we're going to continue this question because, boy, you've already got me thinking about a dozen other things I want to ask you about. But let's start out. What did you do before your current business model? What did you do before Style Matters?
You know, it's interesting. I suspect there aren't many who have followed this path towards publishing, but I was initially in the military. That's how I got through college, and did that for 4 years, and then went to graduate school and got a degree in international. So I studied engineering as an undergrad, which is, you're definitely off to the wrong foot, off on the wrong foot towards publishing when you study engineering. I actually learned to write through it at a grad program called SICE, which is International Relations, and it was nothing if not writing. It was constantly reading and writing and analyzing the international system, and that really sort of got me into writing quite a bit. And then 9/11 happened, and I went back. I'd stayed in the reserves and went back into the military, and found myself writing, being a contributor to a number of different policy reports inside the Pentagon. And between those two experiences, I really started to get an appreciation for writing, and really was picking up from something I left off in maybe the sixth grade, which I'd been a prolific writer as a kid, and really have ever since grad school really enjoyed doing that again. Got an MBA at Wharton, and then became an investment banker. And then in 2006 decided that was something I just could not continue to pursue for a variety of reasons, and came back to writing and publishing, and haven't left since. It's been a great journey. I think, you know, to be a good publisher, you have to have a depth of life experience, and I think you have to be able to understand lots of different dimensions of the world, and certainly I've had that. I have that pedigree, if nothing else.
Well, that's a fascinating path to what you're doing today. I mean, who would have ever guessed that? we could talk all day about that. But now, tell me about Style Matters. What? Share with our audience what it is you do. I mean, you've got such a variety of services you perform.
We do, yeah, and it really all does center around that publishing with a lowercase p. But what I would really like to talk about today is what's happening in the book publishing world. And but briefly, at least that's what I think would be most useful to your readers, or I'm sorry, to your listeners. But overall, the company has three main lines of business activity. One is certainly around book publishing, and so we serve publishers and individual authors to produce and package books, to develop books, and in some cases agent those books for authors to publishers. And so that's soup to nuts, everything from a book from idea stage to getting the books up on the shelves and distribution and marketing. The second is on in the web arena, and so that's developing sites, developing content strategy for larger organizations that have more sophisticated web marketing platforms, and working in the social media arena as kind of a PR/ internet marketing function, and that does also include search engine optimization. The third area is technical writing, and so that's for academics, for the financial industry, doing everything from annual reports to business plans to really esoteric stuff in the academic world, nanotechnology, biofuels, all sorts of things. So it really touches a lot of different pieces. We're a small company. We've got about 15 people that are working for us, and then we have a larger network of individuals that we pull in on a project-by-project basis, almost as consultants, to when there's certain subject matter expertise that's needed, we have the right people that we can call, so we can really address a wide variety of topics and genres.
Before we move on, Robert, one quick question. Let's get clear on the type of client that you service. In other words, as I'm mm-hmm. listening to this, I'm thinking, oh, wow, I'm not going to produce the kind of book that's going to get published in New York. I wouldn't call you to help me. Tell me about your client. Who do you help?
Yeah. So maybe I can talk if you don't mind, how about how we help coaches, because that's a very important segment for us, and we're very committed to the industry on a number of levels. We, as you saw in CAM, we sponsor the industry in different trade shows, and we have a very strong client base, I believe, that comes from coaching. And that, so in that case, in with coaches, it's mostly individual authors and individual practices that we work with to develop books, to develop, in many cases, a marketing platform. I think coaching is can be a difficult place to grow a business because it's a very competitive industry. The clients often choose their partners through word-of-mouth referrals, and so that's a real grinded-out, guerrilla warfare kind of marketing that's required there. And a book is a great way to get a philosophy known to a client base in ways that, it serves as a vehicle for a coach to have his or her philosophy known to a client in a way that sort of anonymous internet marketing would not necessarily work. And it's the longevity of it, the tangibility of it really, I think, offers a special way for a coach to present him or herself as a robust contributor to whatever the goals of that client might be.
Okay. All right. That helps define who it is, and that's
okay,
who we're going to be talking to today is coaches and such. Before we get into the publishing, you know, I was going to ask you this question. We ask everybody, share with me, what is your guiding principle? What experience sort of shaped how you approach the world or life or your business and evolved into that, you know, one irrefutable principle that you must live by?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question. It's a great question. I guess there is, it's hard. I want to say, can I have two? Probably not. That's cheating in some way, I'm sure.
No, I'll give you two. Go ahead. Go for it.
I think if I had to choose one, the guiding principle is pursuit of truth. Pursuit of truth. I think that's what gets us all out of bed in the morning, all of us writers and publishing, production editors, and all the whole crew, is that we're contributing to the pursuit of knowledge, the pursuit of truth, and we all share that philosophy, and then that feeds into what the secondary principle, which is really more of a business principle, which is we don't put out anything that we don't stand firmly behind in terms of quality. So that goes it ranges everything from a book manuscript to its cover to the way that we would pursue a marketing campaign. We're not doing anything halfway, and there is so much out there in the book realm that is less than professional, let's say, and we strive to steer very clear of that. We have no interest in producing any kind of commodity. We think that every project is unique and deserves special attention and deserves its own personality, and so we try to give it that. We project what we do as being equivalent to the top publishing houses in terms of the quality of product that we put out, and I think we achieve that.
Okay, good. Well, from some of the stuff I've seen that you've worked on, I would say that's my impression also. So let's just jump right into it. You know, you mentioned there's many different models for publishing today. What are we talking about there?
Yeah, so, you know, in the old days, and so this is interesting because I think that publishing is a convoluted industry. It's old. It's a very old industry. It hasn't changed a lot until now. And so you have inertia in the industry that is being overcome now through the advent of new technology, really. But you have sort of the old guard clinging to old models. The good news is you have a lot of new, young, energetic individuals, or young, feeling, and energetic individuals who were part of that old guard, who are leading the charge for change and revolution in the industry. But what as a result of that dynamic, you have a couple of things happening. You have a scramble for a shrinking wallet in what was traditionally publishing. So that's one thing. And then, two, you have a lot of experimentation going on, some of which benefit authors and some of which does not. The experimentation can range from books turning into apps on iPhones. There are new just publishing models. So what I wanted to maybe talk about quickly is how specifically how the old model is different from the new model.
Yeah, great.
So the old model, which I'll call traditional publishing, you had authors were introduced to publishers through agents, you know, just like a real estate agent, really. Agent takes a commission on the whole project, and so everybody is a partner in essentially a joint venture. The book is a joint venture where the publisher is the senior partner and takes a lot of control over how the product is ultimately forged and packaged. The agent is there to essentially make the introduction and then kind of work through the contractual piece of it, and then also do some development of future projects related to that, such as movies and future books. And then the author, of course, is the artist, the originator of the content. And the way that that was split from an equity perspective, and still is in traditional publishing, is that the publisher gets the lion's share. It gets maybe 40% of if the book is worth $100, then overall the project, then the publisher would get about 40 of that, and then the author and the agent would split the 10, with the author getting most of that. What happens is you have, in traditional publishing, you have something called net revenues. And so, say a book is sold for $20. It costs money to produce that, and then it, and then the distributors and the retailers want a cut of the retail price as well. So a $20 book, after production and distribution and retail cuts, nets about, roughly about 50% to the publisher. So that's about $10 off of a $20 book. The publisher then splits that contractually with the author, and a typical split for an author is 10 or 12%, maybe 15%. But if you're not a Thomas Friedman or a bestseller, you don't really have much leverage on that percentage, and that tends to be what it is. And so on a $20 book, what you end up with, the author ends up getting, is about a dollar. So that was 10% of the net revenue. So 10% of the 50% that the publisher got.
Okay, I'm with you.
You with me? Okay. And then the agent.
I am. I just wondered whether it's worth doing. Okay, now that I know I'm getting so little.
Please stop me if I am getting too convoluted here. But I think it's important to understand this math, because the way people decide on how to go with their publishing, the economics is one part of that equation and that decision. But just to continue that thought, so the author gets the 10% of that 50% that the publisher nets out after costs, distribution, retail, and production costs. And so for a $20 book, the author ends up getting about a dollar. And so that's a model where the author is, usually would like to get more. And so the way that that's been offset and traditionally is that the publisher will give the author an advance on those royalties, and that tends to be what the author makes, unless they really blow it out and it's a huge success, then they will make more money than the advance. That's pretty rare, but it happens. So what's happened is with the technology advancing in such a radical way, such that you or I can go to Amazon right now and take our, you know, senior year book report, send it to Amazon, and in 2 or 3 weeks it comes back bound like a book for no setup charge and for maybe $3 a copy. What you have is the publishers and trying to figure out what is the real value that they're adding and why should they get such outsized share of the wallet. And that's caused this scram. And so there's two models then that have really come about that have diverged from the traditional publishing model. The first is self-publishing, which is just what I described. Any individual that acts like that publisher and then therefore is responsible for all the things that a publisher does, from getting a Library of Congress number to getting an ISBN, registering the book, essentially, and then printing the book or contracting with a printer to print the book and developing and editing it and creating the art for it. So that's self-publishing. It's really a business.
All of which has become And all of that has become tremendously easy, relatively speaking, in today's electronic environment.
Exactly. It's very accessible. It's not to be deceiving. I think you'll ask, if you talk to anybody who's gone through the process, it's frustrating if you don't, the first time, because you learn, you make a lot of mistakes. It's always helpful to have somebody who's been to the rodeo to sort of guide you through that process, which is incidentally something we do called book shepherding. But you're right. There's really nothing. The barriers to entry are very low. It's really kind of the education of it is really the barrier. And so you have, for coaches and speakers, that's a tremendous opportunity because they, having your own practice, you want to be able to have full control of things. And plus, the timing of it is almost instant. Whereas if you go with a traditional publisher, you're looking at a good year before, once you're done with the manuscript, before your book actually gets out into bookstores. And so
okay. They
offer tremendous value, I think, in that sense. People can produce books cheaply. And then if you self-publish and you're printing that paperback copy for $3 a book, and you're selling it for $20, now you're making real money. Now that's, you know, $15, $17 a book. And you sell 1,000 books, that's real money. That's real money. So the equation's changed quite a bit. And if you're selling from the back of the room or you're selling a couple of times to corporate clients, that's a very achievable number, 1,000 books. But if you're... So that's... That's that model, and maybe I can just pause right there. I want to go into the third model, which is called a hybrid model, but I realize I've been talking a fair amount, so...
No, go ahead, Robert.
Go ahead, okay.
Give me a thumbnail of the third model here,
yes.
Which you said is the new model, but different than the sort of self-publishing we just
mm-hmm.
described.
So the hybrid comes in a couple of forms. One is a pay-to-play. They call these vanity presses sometimes. That's one of the terms for that. But hybrid publishing is really the euphemistic term, and in many cases the appropriate term. A pay-to-play sub-model of that is where you're paying a self-publishing entity to do everything that a publisher would do. So instead of you taking on the responsibility, you're paying them a check and they're packaging it, giving you the cover art, laying it out, signing you up with distributors, and doing all the things that a publisher does. And you pay them a fee, and it's fee for service. You still own all the rights. I think the more interesting model that's come about is one that has been adopted by a couple of firms, and I hope they don't mind that I mention. One is run by a good friend of mine called Bibliomotion. And then there's another firm that's called Hyper Inc. And these are very interesting firms because they do a couple of things that are different from traditional publishing, but they retain some of the good things about traditional publishing as well. So they bring the author to the table on the big decision making. They realize that the author and the author's platform is really a huge part of the value of the book, and so they treat that with, I think, an appropriate amount of respect, and they want them involved in some of the decision making, and so they bring them to the table. The other thing is that it is the equity sharing goes much deeper, and the splits are much more even, meaning that the publisher and the author get more, the splits are more equal. Now, what will happen is often the publisher will only take on select books if they look like they're going to be profitable, which this is what traditional publishing does too, or aims to do. But I think these publishers are a little more savvy about what is going to work in today's market with internet marketing and everything. And they are, they will not pay in advance, but they will pay once a threshold of sales is met, the splits then become almost equal. So I think it's a better model because it's sharing risk more appropriately in the project, and then sharing reward as well. And the last thing that they understand how to market something like a book in today's internet economy. At least that's traditional. That's more and more. That's how we're buying books with the internet. And they understand everything from how a book cover looks as a thumbnail, and the importance of how it looks as a thumbnail compared to how it looks on a printed book, for example. They understand the importance of search engine optimization, the importance of having and developing social media network platforms, and to do that in a real way, not just counting Facebook likes. So it's a cool model. It's a model that I would recommend for authors who have good platforms to stand on and can use the expertise of a publisher to get sales beyond what they would be able to sell in the back of the room.
So Robert, looking at those two models, the two new models, would it be fair to say, and I'm going to kind of generalize, that if my market is I need a book to carry with me when I go to my speaking engagements, and that's probably how I'm going to sell it, then the sort of the self-publishing is where I would go. It's the cheapest, quickest, full control.
That's correct.
If I'm in fact have a topic that I think I can truly market to the world, to some niche, then I'm probably going to go with this hybrid model to take advantage of someone's marketing expertise in helping me create a book and create the marketing of the book that would attract people other than those I'm just going to go speak to.
You've got it. I think that's the essence when we help people through this decision making all the time, at least every week. There are other factors. I mean, that you're focusing on the economics of it, and which I think is important. There's also timing. Self-publishing, you get it out really quickly. With traditional or even hybrid publishing, it'll take a while. And then there is control, which with the hybrid model, you do get much more control. With the traditional model, you get less control.
Okay.
So if you're concerned about your messaging being very specific or if you have very specific ideas about what you want the content to be, tending towards the self-publishing model is a better one.
And at Style Matters, at your company, do you do all three models, the sort of traditional and the two new, let's call them new models? Do you offer those services full range?
We service all models. We only offer the self-publishing model. We're not a traditional publisher in that we're not going to purchase large quantities of books and put them in a warehouse until they sell. That's something.
Oh, come on.
We just can't do that and don't want to. The hybrid model is brings a level of expertise that is frankly beyond what we're able to offer. They have a level of PR that is beyond what we can do, and PR can be very important to push a book out in a big way. You've got to have the right PR, both online and traditional. And so we work with those publishers to produce their books and certainly agent to them. So we like all three models. But we do self-publishing through an imprint called Bluefield Publishing.
And it sounds like one of the things that you do is you sort of help your let's say your coaching clients sort of determine what is the best avenue for them to pursue, and then what your role would be in whatever that choice is.
Yeah, we do. We consult, and often before even an engagement occurs, because we just feel, especially with coaches, we feel a kinship with coaches and just want to be of service and feel that it's good for everybody if we can have that kind of consultation for free to help people think through that strategy. But one thing that we often recommend, not to everybody, but to someone who has a fair shot at getting picked up by a publisher, is to go through the process of developing what's called a book proposal. And a book proposal is, I think, can best be thought of as a business plan for the book project. And so it captures what the book is going to be about, what the author is going to bring to the table as a partner in the project, their platform. So how many speaking engagements do you give? How many corporate clients would you be able to sell into? How many, what is your followership on social media? That sort of thing. That's an author's platform. And then a market analysis of the book, which would include a competitive analysis of what's out there that's similar, as well as demonstrating a strong understanding of who the audience would be and why they would buy the book. And then there's some sample chapters and some details about the book. But it's really a business plan for the book. And in going through that process, you often come to the conclusion of what it is that you want to do, one way or the other. And because the competitive analysis, it may be clear that you're going into a very hyper-competitive market and what you want to say has kind of already been talked about. Or you may find that there really is a niche and you should push for it. But at the end of the day, what you have is something that's very tangible that you can either shop to publishers yourself, you can shop to an agent, or you can then use as basically an outline to complete your book and self-publish it. So it's a very tangible thing, and we like giving people that advice because it gives them ultimate optionality on what to do next, while at the same time exploring the whole business, if you will, of building a book.
You know, it's so logical. I'm surprised I haven't heard of it before. I mean, as a business coach, I wouldn't dream of working with a client, let's say, on a new startup business without first doing a business plan.
Right.
And yet here you are probably identifying for many of us that have thought about writing a book and what the book says and maybe are even into writing the book long before we've developed the book proposal or the book business plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definite error in logic there by not putting those things in the right sequence. Excellent point.
Yeah.
Where does digital publishing fall into this? I mean, now we've got this business where, I'm an avid reader. I read an awful lot. I've spent untold amounts of money collecting hardback books and no place to put them. And now all of a sudden I hardly ever touch a real book. Everything's on my iPad. What's happening to book publishing with digital media?
Oh, yeah. It's the sort of second wave of this revolution. initially it was the technology of being able to print a book quickly and print on demand, you know, to be able to print it as if you're printing off your printer or at Kinko's, essentially, although Kinko's doesn't offer that service. The advent of the Kindle, and really it's the Kindle, let's make no mistake, the Nook is on its way out, I think. And there are others, and I think there will always be others, but really the Kindle and then the iPad has revolutionized the way that we like to read. It's just like, I think I remember when cell phones first came out, and I knew friends who were adamantly resisting the purchase of a cell phone. I don't know if you had that same experience. And I think I myself was at one point part of that resistance. But it's sort of, once you get into it, it just is so logical. There's always going to be, I think, this romantic notion of the physical book and, you know, curling up with a book. And I don't think that goes away. I really don't, because that is a special experience. But I don't think there's any competition against, you know, lugging 20 books around versus a you know, less than, I don't know how many ounces, few ounces in your in your small bag and in your purse. So it really has revolutionized it. There's a couple of, it's sort of getting into now, the rights management of the content is quite convoluted and is being sorted out in the courts, and I really can't speak authoritatively on it other than to say for those listeners aren't familiar with, like, metadata, the metadata of the e-books is kind of in spotlight now. And so, you know, is your, the idea of having your content as an author searchable is out there for in the public domain, parts of it at least, is really sort of in question, and it's not quite clear how that's all going to shake out. And I think there's, you know, again, going back to the nexus of information flow, technology, and design. We are not, technology is going to constantly reinvent itself. It's just really the thing that holds back technology is the ability for the consumer to adopt it fast enough. And so you have all these amazing technologies out there, but it's once the design is able to be connected with that, then you'll have a revolution just like you've had with the iPhone and the iPod. That will change, again, the way that I think we consume information.
Let me ask you this question, Robert. You know, if you think back to the music issue about whether we had tapes or vinyls and then we went digital, the music didn't change. The delivery method changed.
Mm-hmm.
And in books, I'm questioning here, is the, from the author's perspective, is the book that I write going to be any different depending on whether it becomes marketed digitally or whether it becomes published physically?
I think it is. Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it. I think it is. I think we're tending generally towards short. It's sort of part of a macro trend of sort of short bursts of information. And smaller ebooks. If you look at, for example, our in a print book, 200 to 300 pages is a comfortable mid-sized book. We go over 300, we go to 400, kind of like, oh, it's long. But so in an ebook, if you take that 200 page book and make it into an ebook, now you're like at 1,000 pages. And just the number, the psychology of that. I mean, you can get into a 200-page ebook that is really, in reality, maybe 50 pages of a book, but it's still, you know, and it can be consumed in an hour or two. And I think that the way that it's already happening, the way that that ebooks are written, they're written shorter, more compact, to deliver very focused information. I think that is absolutely going to happen. And I think that's where you may see a bifurcation in where the technology may come into play. Things that, and I'm not sure how this would play out, but the sort of short burst information versus sort of long form. And I think there are going to be different ways to consume that. Maybe more with interactive media or with more graphical content versus what we're used to with the novel or long nonfiction book.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't go to the ultimate that we don't have ebooks anymore. We just have YouTube videos.
Just tweet.
I mean, that would be taking it to the extreme, which I really wouldn't like.
Yeah.
But do you perform the same role with someone who's looking at doing an ebook?
We do. It's really
okay.
There are occasions where it has a much more laser focused marketing. Where the marketing kind of drives the content. We've had a couple of projects like that, and that's kind of what I was referring to before. Where there's like a white paper, for example. The white paper is truly a marketing tool for coaches in particular or small practices of any kind to describe their philosophy in maybe 20 or 30 pages of manuscript text. To put that into an ebook form, yeah, we treat that a lot differently. The economy of words is a big piece of that. So, and how it's organized and keeping the flow, it's all managed a little bit differently because the purpose is ultimately much different. It's usually designed to move virally, and so we want it to have the components that will attract people. Right off the bat, it'll get them to open their email or open that attachment or click on that link so that they could see it and pass it along.
You made a comment at the beginning of this show. I want to ask you about it. You said something about apps. Now, is an ebook going to become an app?
Here's what my thought on that. I think we've kind of been through that, and I think the answer is no, with an asterisk. I think there are special cases. So academic books have the potential to go to be their own app. So a biology book, for example, you can imagine with the graphical content that could accompany a biography. A biology book, and so in that way, it may be worth having, for an academic publisher, McGraw-Hill or Jones and Bartlett or somebody to develop an app that would be, or a university to develop an app that is, for freshman biology majors or something like that. That the books would conform to. I could certainly
You're talking textbook application.
I am. And so that's one type. I think, again, books that are heavy in graphical content, I think it may make sense. For your standard, nonfiction leadership book or novel, I don't think, you just get much more efficiency out of a Kindle or the iBook than you, I think, would out of an individual app, and it just becomes too expensive, honestly, to develop.
Okay. Look, we're starting to run out of time. I can't believe how fast it's gone by. I mean, this has just been great information that you shared with us. Before we wind up, is there anything you wanted to cover that we didn't get to that you want to take a couple minutes to share with our audience right now?
Yeah, sure. I guess a lot of folks ask about whether or not their book is is it worthy of traditional publishing? Not worthy. Would it be picked up by a publisher or not? And I think that is always going to be a tough question. I would go back to this notion of this building into your plan some optionality through this book proposal idea. because you're able to really kind of explore that notion in a pretty honest way, because it's not you're not creating a book, so it's not that much of a labor, but it is enough of a labor where you're having to think about it quite a bit, and you're having to solve some, you kind of move some big rocks on the strategy end. We do that. We build book proposals. It's one of our primary lines of business. And as part of that process, we can put clients in touch with agents and sort of sniff out, if we're not going to be the agent ourselves, we can sniff out some demand from publishers that we have connections with to help get an answer to that question. And so that's something we're willing to do.
Okay.
I would just say one last thing, if I have a minute, on that same
sure.
front, is don't underestimate the value of making these strategic choices at the beginning and organizing your book at the beginning, because it just makes life so much easier down the road. Going back over a manuscript where you realize halfway through that it's not going in the direction that you want it to go, it's a real morale killer. And writing a book is a lot about keeping morale, as I'm sure some listeners know.
It's so. Tough to sort through your children once you have them. I understand the concept.
That's a great way to put it.
Robert, hey, I've really enjoyed you being here today. Very quickly, how do people get in touch with you?
Sure, you can go to our site, which is style-matters.com. You can certainly feel free to email me at robert@style-matters.com. We have a Twitter feed. We have a Facebook page. I'm on LinkedIn. The company's on LinkedIn. We have a blog. Come and say hello, and I would encourage people who are struggling through these big issues to give us a call, because we're very friendly and very receptive, especially to coaches.
Well, I can vouch for that. I appreciate the time that you spent with me at the CAM conference answering some of my questions, and that's sort of what generated this interview. So thank you very much for taking the time today, the inconvenience of the time differential here, and I just want to say, welcome to the Coaching Perspective community, and we'll look forward to having you back again sometime.
Thank you. I'd love to be back. It was an absolute delight. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a nice evening.
Thanks, Doug.
All right. Hey, if you just tuned in, where were you? You missed a great show, How to Get Published. Boy, we went in some directions I hadn't anticipated that were just fascinating. We were listening or talking to Robert Murray of Style Matters. If you've missed it or came in late, we will have it up on our website and also on our Podbeam website on Monday. Come on, give me a couple of days here, okay, Monday. And be sure to catch it then, and it'll be there in perpetuity, so you can look at it anytime and listen to it as many times as you want. No extra royalty charges. So, hey, thanks very much for tuning in. This is Doug Gefeller of the Coaching Perspective. Hoping that we provided you with information that you can go out and use right away. And I think we did. Have a nice evening.
You've been listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.